You're tuned into Desperate, a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane to visit ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. Retire your apron, kick off your heels, and sit back. Hit it, girls!
Hey everyone, welcome to Desperate. This is a show where two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane of Desperate Housewives, one of ABC's critically acclaimed shows from the early 2000s. But as we've said before, it ended in, I think, 2012 or 2013. So It had a nice long run. It was a part of the cultural lexicon for quite a while. But we're not housewives. We are just visiting these women and seeing what we can really learn from them. And most of the time, it's about things not to do, I'd say, at this point. We've seen many parenting mishaps and relationship mishaps much worse than our own. So If anything, it's made me feel better about my life.
Yeah. Oh, me too. I'm like, I think my life could be this big of a shit show, but luckily it's not, so...
I know, I'm like, I may not be married with a nice house, but I also don't have this craziness in my life. I also don't get drunk while babysitting. So.
Yeah, no, and let kids run away.
I don't have a love triangle with it. Yeah, I don't get drunk with a, or not drunk. I don't have a love triangle with a doctor and a plumber and my ex-husband.
Lawyer, doctor, and plumber.
Oh yeah, I forget that he's a lawyer because I didn't find that out till season two. But
they don't make it a big thing, but yeah.
No, they don't until they need him to be a lawyer. Till they need a handy dandy lawyer.
Yeah, they're like a couple plot points require a lawyer, so they're like, here, make Carl the lawyer.
I know, why didn't Gabby go to Carl for law advice when Carlos was in jail?
Just saying, even with this baby thing. I mean, even with this baby thing.
Oh, the baby. Yeah, when they're adopting a baby. Yeah.
I'm like, when they're trying to adopt, I'm like, Carl's. But I mean, I feel like Carl's slimy as hell. Like, why not? I don't know.
Carl, yeah, would sell someone a baby.
Oh, yeah.
So, not above it. Yes. But today we're watching season two, episode 18. It's titled Everybody Says Don't. And before that, we can bring you up to speed on where we were the last few episodes. Speaking of Carlos and Gabby buying a baby, they found a baby that they'd like to buy. It's from a stripper named Libby. And she at first says that she doesn't want to sell it to them because they're Hispanic and we see some good old-fashioned discrimination. But then Gabby, like, convinces her through somewhat flattery by just telling her that she has a lot of money, I guess, and being like, we'll give you whatever you want, that she will give them the baby. But then at the end, we see that Libby has a boyfriend and probably isn't planning on giving the Solises her baby at all. And Gabby got duped, I guess. So that's what was up with them. What will happen? We don't know, but and that's going on. And then Lynette had a bit of a one-off storyline, but did get our Housewife of the Week last week. And that's because she manipulated a 5 to 10-year-old. We don't know how old he is, but he is too old to be breastfeeding. She manipulated him into drinking regular chocolate milk instead of his mom's breast milk around the office because it was making everybody uncomfortable that this new hire lady was breastfeeding everywhere. And she took one for the team, literally, because nobody else on her team was going to talk to this lady about breastfeeding. So, yes, that happened.
She got forced into it. that was a bit of a poor mess for Lynette. It was, like, low-key sexism that she was the one that had to deal with it, but whatever.
Yeah, one of the guys was like, I hit on her, so I can't go talk to her. And I'm like, whatever. Since when is that ever an excuse?
This is like so set. Like everything that was happening in that meeting, I was like, all right, cool.
Ed is the worst.
Yeah, no, he is. So in the meantime, while Lynette and Gabby were having their adventures, Bree finally attends Alcoholics Anonymous, but she tells him, like, she's just lying. She's not accepting that she's alcoholic and basically tries to tell this guy, Peter, who's leading the meeting, that she doesn't have a problem. But later at the department store, she gets a little drunkity drunk and wakes up.
She gets drunk at a Nordstrom.
Oh, yeah. She fucking wakes up and she's in the fitting room, which Julie and I debunked that could ever happen. But anyway, so Peter has to come get her out. And that's kind of like her rock bottom, I guess. While she's at the department store, though, in the meantime, before she passes out drunk, Andrew basically threatens her with quote unquote repressed memories of abuse when he was growing up. And so that's kind of what pushes her over the edge and why she gets so drunk. And yeah, that night she and Peter just talk and she kind of comes to realize that she really does have an issue. So that's where that story left us off. And then last and kind of least, we have Susan, who hopefully, fingers crossed, her storyline with this goddamn surgery is over. It's taken half the season at this point. So she... so stupid. But she gets home from the hospital and Dr. Ron, I guess that's his whole... That's just what we're going to call him forever. He
has a first name, but we forgot. No, yeah, Ron so is his first name.
Yeah,
sorry.
Ron's his first name, but he has a last name, but we don't know.
He has a last name.
Yeah, and just Ron just sounds wrong. It doesn't work. But so he asks her, basically confronts her about who Mike is. And she's like, oh, I don't know Mike. He's like, everyone knows a Mike. So now she's just making it worse. And she just lies and she's like, no, like, it's not anyone of consequence. And then he asks her about being married to Carl. And she immediately tells him her whole, like, scheme about the insurance fraud. Again, I'm like, this is where Carl and Susan just like repeatedly fuck up by just lying to people who seem to be pretty understanding, but whatever. So basically Ron ends up coming over for dinner with her and Carl so she could prove to him that there's no feelings between her and Carl. Carl can't seem
clearly
to handle,
obviously, because that's the obvious like fix there. Invite him to dinner with the guy.
Yep,
stupid.
That's
Susan.
The fix, folks. She's so fucking stupid. So Carl decides to fuck around in Susan's life, which seems to be his hobby, and he sees Mike get home, and Susan had told him about saying I love Mike in the surgery room, so he knew what was going on. And he, like, smashes her sink. No, he doesn't really. But he does smash her pipe up to a point where there's water everywhere. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
And Ron doesn't notice for, like, 4 minutes. Like,
yeah, he's, like, standing in the sink for a while.
He's, like, walking in a puddle of water.
Yeah.
He's, puddle of water.
That shit was rough. I was like, come on, dude. So Carl decides to tell him that there is a plumber across the street named Delfino, just to spice things up. So Dr. Ron goes over to Mike's house, and they're kind of making small talk, and Mike basically says, you can call me Mike. Ron realizes what's happening and runs off, and Susan, in the meantime, realizes what's going on and tries to wheelchair herself out of there, and Susan kind of, like, grabs onto him, but he, like, pushes her arm off, and she falls out of her wheelchair. I'm still not 100% sure on the physics of how she ended up on the ground, but Mike assumes that Dr. Ron shoved her, so they kind of get into, like, this fight. And then they kind of, like, Susan manages to get them both to calm down, but it's, like, the most pathetic fight ever. And then Ron, like, drives off all pissed, and they break up. And Susan kind of looks at Mike all pissed, and that's that on that. So...
Yeah, she was, oh, then Mike, I think, comes over and tries to talk to Susan about it after, and he's like, what's up with that? And she's like, you shouldn't drive away the only guy who wants to be my boyfriend or something like that. And I was like, whatever.
Like, it was just very peak just, Susan.
Woe is you.
Susan's always the victim, guys. That's what the show should be called, Susan the Victim.
Susan's the victim. And then we find out that we did get some Applewhite action. We find out that Matt Applewhite is 19, so he's committing statutory rape. It never leaves the show. He is committing statutory rape with Danielle, and he is not allowed to have a job. Betty doesn't let him have a job, so we, like, know she's very controlling. And he's, like, asking her for money to buy Danielle a gift for her birthday, and he asked for $50, which
to buy jewelry.
I mean, I don't even know what I don't know what that was worth in 2005, but $50 will not get you much right now. Like, you can go get a hot dog for that much money. I don't know. So yeah, you can go get McDonald's. Like, yeah. I have no idea. $50 doesn't get you far, but Caleb sees this altercation or this fight, and he's like, "What's going on?" And they tell him it's Danielle's birthday. And then Danielle comes home after a party, it seems, and she's like, and she goes into her room, and Caleb's there, and you're like, "Wait, what?" And Caleb's like, "I bought you this gift." And she's like, "Ew, freak, get away," and forces him away. And that's that. It's like, I don't know. Everybody treats him like shit, and they know that he's disabled. So, yeah, we'll see what happens there. But my theory is that, I know, my theory is that at this point, this far into the season, that Betty killed that chick back in Chicago. And... mm-hmm. She like made up this story about her son because I feel like she's a bit crazy and controlling. So that's my theory. Mm-hmm. But we're like very excited. Season two. Yeah, I know. I can't say with everybody else. I think that Susan and Mike will get, this is my other theory, just I guess Susan and Mike are going to get back together by the end of the season. Dun, dun, dun. That's my guess.
Okay.
So, I don't know when. I can't say what episode that'll happen, but that's my guess. We're getting there. Okay. So,
man, oh, man. I can't wait for us to finish out this season. Oh, man.
Good season stuff coming. Season 2, anyway. Episode 18, Everybody Says Don't is the episode today. And before that, we have our Desperate Deeds for you. I have a good one.
Yes, we do. All right, let's hear it.
I've been saving this up, but David... okay, so a while back, I had a desperate deed related to my ex-boyfriend coming... boyfriend is a light term. I don't even know if I want to call him that. But my ex coming to my house and leaving flowers and a note and cookies that he didn't make. And I threw it all in the trash. I think we'd established time and again that it's not okay to go to somebody's house or their place of work to just try and make up for whatever or like win them back. Like if you have to get to that point, it's usually beyond the point of any return. But my aunt, and I didn't find this out, I found it out through gossip with my mother when I visited my hometown. I went on a hometown visit and it was just as disappointing as it always is, but I spent some time with my mother and she delivered me non-disappointing information about my life back home. So my aunt was dating this guy for the past couple years, and he was going through like a midlife crisis for sure. And he sold his house and invested in a bar/restaurant that he now works at. But like he invested with like 4 or 5 other people and like none of them work there because they're just investors. And like his job is literally a bartender now. My aunt's not impressed. And she's like, "Why would you sell your house?" But they had a multitude of other problems. He was really jealous, I guess. Like, I don't know. He was whatever. So they broke up around July. I guess that they were talking on and off, as people do sometimes after they break up. And he would come by the house. He left tacos for my grandma one time from the restaurant on her car because, like, nobody was home. And I'm like, oh, so he's just doing house calls. So that was the first red flag. Like, don't do that. I know it's nice you're leaving food for my grandma, but she can feed herself. Second, so though I guess my aunt went to dinner with him because he got really aggressive over text messages and was like, "You are a bitch," yada yada, just name calling, texting her rude things about their breakup. And this was months after it happened, claiming that she cheated on him. She didn't. And just being crazy, all types of crazy. So they end up going to dinner because after he was rude, he begged her. This is abusive behavior, by the way. Mm-hmm. He begged her to take her out to, like, apologize. And so she was like, "Fine, we'll go out." And then it wasn't even like they went to dinner, just them two, I guess. They went out with another couple. And I'm like, what kind of apology is dinner? Is that, like, yeah, like he took you out on, like, a business dinner?
Yeah, it was weird. What the fuck?
So... then afterwards, he, like, took her home, and he's like, "So you're going to spend the night, right?" And she's like, "No, I'm going to, like, sleep in my own bed. I have to work tomorrow, and, like, we're not together."
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever the reason is. Whatever reason she wants. Not to want to spend the night at your house. Yeah. And then he, I guess, went back to his old ways and started blowing up at her again, being like, you're a fucking cheater. You're going to go meet another guy tonight. I know that's why you don't want to spend the night. And she's like, no, I literally have to work in the morning. So he goes all types of crazy, but it doesn't end there. He came back. He went and got drunk. He came back, was like banging on the windows and doors of my grandmother's house. And then he took a marker, like a window marker, which I don't know why he had that on hand. And he wrote lying cheater on her window in big letters. And then my aunt had to scrape it off the next day because you can't wash it off. You literally have to scrape it off like a razor.
But she's literally desperate. Susan. It's literally Susan when horror was like painted on her garage.
Yes. Yeah, that's what it was from her crazy ex-boyfriend.
Oh, my God.
So if you or anyone you know has a story where their ex or anybody has come to their house in an act of desperation, let me know because I'm accumulating stories at this point. It's so desperate.
I mean, even like,
yeah, and then she,
folks in the audience, what? I didn't even know this update yet. So like, what the fuck? Like, I'm losing my mind right now. What?
Yeah. I only found out like a couple days ago. This happened like a month or two ago. And I was like, why didn't you tell me? And then the sad part is, okay, and it's a bad cycle. It's like, I feel bad, but she's talked to him for a little bit after that, like being like, I don't know, not like to get back together. I guess they argued and then he tried to win her back again. But that's a cycle of abuse, everyone. Don't fall for it. Oh, my God,
yeah. Like, the key to a true apology means that you're not going to do that. Like, keep doing that shit over and over and over, like, consistently. And, like, yeah, he you're right. Like, he apologizes and then the next day is like, just kidding. I'm going to do it again because it gets your attention.
He's crazy. So don't let them come to your house. Don't even give them your address.
No.
Don't give them your address till you're married.
On the wedding day, you exchange addresses. Oh, my God.
Yeah, you can finally come to my house.
Holy shit. Yes. Wow. I don't even... Now mine's going to sound stupid. You, like, dropped any desperate dude ever. So I was at a wedding, like, a year and a half ago. And the father of the bride gave a speech.
I fucking know this? That my story doesn't top this. I know.
Yes, it does.
It's so fucking weird.
So the speech starts out, like, really sweet. There was, like, some drama before the wedding, but overall it started out okay. And then he starts going into how when they were pregnant with this person, I'm keeping it super anonymous for obvious reasons, they talked about how, like, the doctor said their baby might have, like, handicap or, like, mental issues. So apparently he's like, we debated aborting the baby, and was like, but it turned into this, like, crazy anti-abortion speech. Which, like, okay, if that's your beliefs, that's fine. But maybe don't do it at your daughter's wedding. And maybe don't talk about how, like, we should all be grateful that they're anti-abortion because we wouldn't have this person alive if it weren't for their super amazing choice. Well, while that was happening, my mom was kind of like the wedding, unofficial wedding coordinator. Like, she kind of was running the show. And
yeah,
her job was, like, handing the mics to the people that are talking. And so I was watching my mom. I was at the back table. I was physically cringing while this was happening. I couldn't even look. I couldn't even look at what was happening. I felt so bad for this person, that the person getting married. I was like, this is just brutal. My dad even is looking at me like, holy fucking shit. Like, he could, like, his eyes were huge. I look up at my mom, and she's standing up kind of by the tables where they're giving, like, the, you know, where, like, the wedding party's seated. And there's, like, this closet, like, an IT closet, and I watch my mom with her eye, like, horrified, just slowly back into the closet so no one could see her, so she didn't have to keep listening to the fucking speech. And it might be one of my favorite moments of her desperation to get out of that situation. Because she, and later she was like, I couldn't just take the mic from him. I'm like, no. I'm like, you couldn't. Like, that was just a train wreck. It was a fucking train wreck, but that's my desperate deed this week. That was a horrible thing.
I remember that. Yeah.
And my mom was literally that meme of Homer Simpson when he, like, floats back into the hedges, like, uncomfortably. Like, that was my mom just, like, floating back into that room. She was like, oh, my God. I'm like, cut the mic. Just kidding. But, yeah, that was brutal. I know. So, word to the wise, if your child's getting married and you have the opportunity to give a speech, don't turn it into a politicized issue about abortion. I just feel like abortion's not really a fun topic to bring up at a wedding in general, but yeah, maybe keep that out of your speeches, friends, and let your parents know you do the same thing.
I was floored when I heard this story. It was horrifying. The speech sounded bad, and at this point, I don't want people making speeches at my wedding. Fucking wild no speeches. Cards.
Everyone's wild carding out there. I want it, like, pre-approval. That way I could practice my reactions to things.
Some bullet points, some talking points. I can practice my reactions. Get the photographer, get this reaction shot.
Mm-hmm. Gotta be prepped.
Yes, I love it. Well, if you guys have any desperate deeds that are similar or this resonates, let us know. But oof. Other than that, we're gonna go watch the episode. We're really thrilled to see what debauchery these ladies get into. I'm nervous. But season 2, episode 18, Everybody Says Don't. And we'll be back after that, but make sure to buckle up.
Buckle up.
Susan and Carl's scheme is brought to light, and both have to pay the price. Gabby and Carlos solve their baby daddy issue, for now. Bree gets a new sponsor and faces developments in Andrew's emancipation case. Lynette is forced to figure out the truth when she gets deposed as a witness for Andrew.
Okay. We're here. It's taken us a lot of time to get here. I'm just going to be honest.
Yeah.
We have had technical difficulty up and down, but we're here.
Yes, we made
it. So, yes, we were talking before we cut out about how stupid Susan is, but that's not news to anybody.
No. It's painful to watch.
It's getting horrible to watch. Yes, but overall, this episode is about temptation, mm-hmm. I believe.
Yeah.
And it starts off with Bree. Bree has a lot of temptation. Mm-hmm. Andrew has temptation for that ex Tara. Mm-hmm. Embarrassing. It's like, imagine if that happened to you. Like, somebody had documented how badly you wanted an ex Tara and, like, showcased it for the rest of your life. It's embarrassing.
Also, can we talk about how, like, the product placement... just as a whole.
Yeah.
I mean, it was incorporated just fine, I guess, but it is funny. Like, now that we're adults, I feel like we notice stuff like that. And it's just like, wow, I wonder how much, like, Nissan paid. Because that's literally a whole scene built around.
I know. Oh, yeah, because they're talking about the features and stuff, too. Yeah. He's like, sound system, what's up with that?
Yeah,
like,
does it have MP3? Stressful. But I was like, wow, I do. Sometimes, like, I wish we had... We need to find someone that worked in the production side of it, because I really want to know, like, I want to know these things. How much did they pay? Because they clearly were, that and Volvo, I feel like, were the two big sponsors, because Susan's always driving a Volvo.
Oh, yeah, Susan's driving her, like, station wagon Volvo.
Yeah, and they always show her with, like, getting in and out of her car for absolutely no reason, because she's, like, the one person that never has anywhere to go.
Yeah, and no shame on you if you drive an Xterra. Yeah, they're cool, no. But, like, that level of, like, interest in it was unfounded.
I know.
It was so uncalled for.
He was acting like she had, like... a fucking Porsche or something. Like, I would be like, yeah, if it's like a nice ass, like a
He acted like it was a Maserati or something. Yeah. It was not. So, but we can talk about the other temptation. I guess, like, Carlos and Gabby have the temptation to steal a baby. I don't know. We'll go through it. Yeah. But that seemed to be the running theme, and Susan's a fucking idiot still. So it starts off, though, Mary Alice Young is watching, she's watching Bree closely in the, So it starts off that Mary Alice Young is watching Bree closely in the afterlife. She says, on her first day of sobriety, Bree found a cork that reminded her how much she missed wine. And I respect that Bree is an alcoholic specifically with wine. Mm-hmm. What some would call a wino.
Oh, yeah.
And Johnny Depp has the tattoo Wino Forever, which used to be Winona Forever.
But I do, like, appreciate that. Was like, I'm glad her name was Winona, because that made it easy for him. Because he is a wine guy, like, that we've learned.
Yeah. So. I know that he has a crazy amount of wine, mm-hmm. and he invests in wine, whatever the hell he does with his spare time.
Yeah.
But so she missed wine, and I get that. She called her sponsor, Peter, if we'll recall, who brought over a DVD that they watched till her craving passed. And they looked like they were having a jolly good time watching. They were, like, laughing. Like, this must have been the funniest movie they've ever seen.
I know.
They,
like, who even watches a movie these days and is cackling like that?
Nah, I've never cackled. They don't make them funny anymore.
I think the only time that's happened is when we went and saw Twilight. Like, for the 10-year anniversary in theaters. Also, we went and saw Twilight for the 10-year anniversary in theaters.
I'll never forget. It was, like, a spur of the moment, too. Yeah. I was like, I don't know. We go to the movies, but there's not much playing. I'm like, let's just go to this 10-year anniversary showing of Twilight at, like, an AMC. Yeah. It was, like...
And it was really fun. It was, like, a theater full of, like, girls our age that were, like, in middle school when the book came out.
It was so fun. That was awesome. I love Twilight. Me too. Mostly for the comedic factor.
Oh, God. It's entertaining. But... That's what you want at the end of the day, right?
Yeah. So, they watched this movie. They were vibing. Mm-hmm. 5 days later, when she wanted Merlot, Peter brought over cards. And then next week, he brought over Chinese takeout. So, clearly, they're getting feelings for each other. Mm-hmm. Those are date activities to a degree. Maybe cards. But
it looked like not just like a date, like a couple that had been together for a while.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's the kind of activity you do for that.
Yeah. They were have an understanding. And she says by date 20 days of sobriety, she stopped thinking about sobriety because her thoughts were centered elsewhere and mm-hmm. she was horny. So, and he does look like Tarzan. We'll see. Peter, she asks him, Peter, what's the easiest way to overcome addiction? And he goes into it. He's like, shock therapy, hypnosis, everybody tries these different things. But I think the best way to do it is taking it one day at a time. And he asks her why she asked that. And she's like, I'm getting fucking impatient about being sober. And I would be too at day 90 or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
She kisses him on the cheek out of nowhere. And he's like, he's shocked. He's like, stunned.
I was pretty shocked by it too, because I feel like Bree's like supposedly old-fashioned, and that was a very like she came on to him, which
she
is,
went for it
goes against everything that
she leaned in. Sober Bree is a different woman. Mm-hmm. And he's like, what are you doing? And she's like, just give me a kiss. And he's like, why? He seems scared and you're confused because Bree's hot and he should be thankful that she's kissing him anywhere. And she's like, just saying thank you for everything you've done over the past few weeks. Like, and what's wrong with that? And he's like, well, I'm an SA, and that's Sex Addicts Anonymous. And Bree fucking laughs. Mm-hmm. So that's embarrassing for her because you should be respectful. Like, she didn't know Sex Addicts Addict like existed.
I mean, no. And she doesn't, I don't even think she truly believes that people can be like, alcohol. I don't think she understands addiction. I think that in her mind, it's like, cause she doesn't really believe that she's an addict.
Yeah.
And so I feel like to her, it's like, well, you're either functioning or you're not functioning. She doesn't view it as like addiction. So in her mind, I'm like, but I feel like she has to know, like, to be considered an alcoholic, you have to be like passing out, doing all these horrible things. So I'm like, if someone's telling you that they're a sex addict, that probably means they've done some like crazy
shit. He probably has syphilis.
Yes. Like,
she's cackling at him. Yes. She's like, ah! And you're like, stop. That's embarrassing. And he's like, no, really, I'm a sex addict. And he says, this is as much of a problem as booze. And you turn me on, like when you turn me on like that, it's a problem. And she's like, it was just a peck. And I'm like, you're clearly not listening to him. Like, he told you it's a problem. And he's like, it doesn't matter, like the slightest touch gets the juices flowing. And I was like, did he have a boner when they were laughing on the couch watching that movie?
I don't know.
But she says, how long has it been? He says, 1 year. And they have this thing that if I can keep a plant alive, I can move on to a pet and then I can start dating. And he says that he's on his fourth ficus, so he's clearly not going well. He's not gonna date anytime soon. And then Bree kisses him again because she's a fucking asshole.
Yeah.
And she's like, see, I think you can handle affection better than you give yourself credit for. And it's like, not about affection, it's about sex. Like, chill.
Yeah.
So then she doesn't see this coming, and neither did we. He rips his shirt off and throws her on the table, and it is really hot and attractive.
It was hot.
And he looks like Tarzan. And then he gets embarrassed because he realizes that – and not – I mean, I don't even know if he's embarrassed. It's also just that he realizes that he broke his sex addiction –
he almost did.
Streak, I don't know. Yeah. And then he's like, I gotta go. And he runs out. And Bree's like, no, you forgot your shirt. And he says, just fucking keep it. So Bree had answered her own question. The easiest way to overcome one addiction is to replace it with another.
which is very on brand.
And then we hit that intro. Mm-hmm. And Marielle Young continues with after that great cold open. She says, Temptation, name of a well-known establishment on the outskirts of Fairview. And
I wonder where we're headed.
I know. We established that this is not topsy-turvy from season one, that strip club. It's a different one. Sadly. So there is not a scarcity of strip clubs in the area. Its reputation was well established. Everyone who goes there wants to get their hands on something, and when they cross a line, they are punished. And I think we see some girl like slapping a hand. She's like, no. And as a certain married couple was about to discover. So Gabby and Carlos are there, and they're clearly looking for their baby mama, Libby. So some chick comes up and offers Carlos the lap dance, and he has to think about if he doesn't want one or not. And Gabby's like, what the fuck?
She's like, I'm standing right here. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah. So they're gifting Libby a camera, hoping that she likes it.
Very, like, 2006 gift.
It's like a Sony digital camera. And Gabby's tired of trying to kiss her ass, and Carlos is like, well, she's giving us her baby, so we have to kiss whatever. Mm-hmm. And Libby comes over and is pissed that they're there, even though they brought her a gift. And so she grabs the gift and she's like, you have to leave. And Gabby is like, you can at least open it so we can bask in your happiness. And then the bouncer comes over and is asking them if there's a problem. And Libby's like, no, they're leaving. Mm-hmm. We learn more about this bouncer. His name is Frank, and he happens to be Libby's boyfriend. So her lie unraveled rather quickly in the span of one episode. So they find out that Libby is, you know, didn't really tell Frank that she's trying to sell this baby, and didn't tell Gabby and Carlos that she had a boyfriend. Mm-mm. So they're like, hell no, when they find this out.
Yeah.
And we can just go ahead and talk about Gabby, since that's where we're starting.
Yeah.
But the gist of it is they do get their baby and they steal it.
One way or another.
Yeah, one way or another, they get their baby. So they go to their lawyer after this, being like, this stripper lied. And they say that Frank, the father, is in the dark and he wants to keep the baby. And the lawyer is like, well, if the father wants to keep the baby, I don't know if there's anything we can do. Yeah. And I'm like, is that even real? Like, if I were to get pregnant and the baby daddy wanted to keep the baby, I can't give it up for, like, I feel like that's not real. Like, it's the woman's choice.
So I think, though, like, she could, essentially, the father has rights before an adoptive couple. So basically, the father could, she could sign away her rights to him. But she can't just, like, give the baby away without giving him the opportunity to have it. He can't make her keep it, but he can take it if he wants.
Wow, lessons in law right here. Okay, well, I think that's fucked up, but... So they are saying that they don't, because the lawyer's like, I can find you another one. They don't want another one. They want this one because they are sure that it's going to be hot when it's older. And that's like kind of hilarious to me. That's the only reason they want this baby so bad. They're like, it's going to be hot. Like,
but why are you so desperate for this baby? Like, I have to say, like, you'll find another baby. Like, it's.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're kind of debating what to do. They're like, we could just walk away now. But Gabby's like, don't get cold feet. And let's just pay Frank like we paid Libby and bring the baby home. And the lawyer's like, hold on, you paid this chick because you're not supposed to do that.
Even though he repeatedly told him that a few episodes ago. We can't give money.
So you said that we could give her gifts and everyone loves cash. And he's like, I could be disbarred. Not that he's that, like, upstanding lawyer. He thinks he's an upstanding lawyer or something. But I can't condone baby buying and I can't be a part of it. And then they try and explain themselves. And he says, if you want to go down this road, you can sign this waiver and I can have Frank sign it too. I can't be a part of that either. So, you know, just handle this discreetly. Mm-hmm. So he's a pretty dirty lawyer, but that's what they decide that they're going to do. But Carlos, like, loses his mind. And the next scene, we see him just stuffing money in a bag. Fucking, like stacks of cash.
And you're going to hear me repeatedly ask this, but where the fuck is their money coming
from? Always. We're wondering. So much. We never will know. He apparently has $40,000. He's stuffing $40,000 in a bag frantically.
In cash.
Yes. And she's like, how much are you going to give him? He's like, $40,000. And she's like, $1,000? Like, are you fucking insane? He's a bouncer at a strip club. Like, start with $8,000. And I agree. Like, Gabby has her head on right. And he's like, he won't sell this baby for $8,000. Like, Carlos is out of it.
He's like, he's literally doing like the worst business tactics ever. Like, showing his hand right away. Like, I thought you were a good businessman, sir. Like, what's happening?
It was hilarious. He's like, and she's like, I think for $8,000 we're good, maybe throw in a kidney. And she's joking. I like that, Gabby. You can have a sense of humor through this all. She says, you're not as good as this. You paid sticker price for your car. I think he says that. He says that to her. And I think she says, what's the sticker price on a child? And they decide that it's $12,000.
No, no. So. She accuses him of paying.
Oh, she's saying okay.
And then he goes, well, like, you can't put a sticker price on a kid. She's like, I'm thinking $12,000. And he's like, looking at her, and that's when she says, I have my hobbies and you have yours.
Oh, okay. I missed that in the notes. But yes, they talk about the sticker price, and I'm glad that I'm like, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
Carlos paid sticker price.
Because Carlos, think about it though. Gabby grew up poor in a sense of like she's a social climber, right?
Yeah.
In like the best way possible, which means she also though knows how to make the most of her resources. Carlos, meanwhile, his whole thing is flaunting how much he spent.
Yeah.
So like for him, remember he's told Gabby, like, tell them how much I spent on your necklace. So like for him paying
episode
sticker
one
price,
throwback.
But like to him, like paying sticker price is like it's kind of a fuck you to everybody. Like I don't even have to negotiate. Whereas Gabby's like, no, I want to spend money on more things. Like, lodge, think,
Carlos. I think $12,000 is reasonable.
I think it is, like, too. Something's wrong with us, but we're like, yes, Gabby.
I was just thinking that. I'm like, I would never want my child to know I paid $12,000 for them, but I think it's pretty reasonable in their situation. So then we see Libby and Frank at the strip club. She's saying Frank has to sign the paper because she made the deal. And he's like, this baby is in a used car. It's a baby. And I'm loving their car metaphor throughout it. It's not a car, but we're going to buy it like one.
Yeah.
So before you screw this up, remember I can go to the cops about the pot farm you have in our basement. And he's like, it's not for profit. It's just a hobby. And they're arguing. And he's like, it's my kid. I have a right to mess her up if I want. Mm-hmm. And if you go to the police, I'll tell them about you stealing tips. And they have found people. Gabby and Carlos have found people who are worse than them. Or maybe equivalent in different ways.
I almost want to, like, it feels like to an extent that Gabby just wants this baby so she, because she, like, I know she wants a baby, but this baby specifically, it's like she has to get what she wants type of thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, there's so many red flags here where I'm like, don't any other baby. Like, we're
there's
both parents.
Bunch of them. Willing. Well, like, you saw the ugly people they were dealing with last episode.
They had beautiful babies, according to Mary Alice.
I know. So. They could have had a beautiful one. So Gabby's kind of over this. Carlos is like, maybe there's a way we can work this out together. They're saying there's nothing to work out. If Frank's not on board, it's over. And Libby's like, hold up. It doesn't matter what he wants. He's not the dad. And so plot twist. He's asking about taking a paternity test and he wants to know whose it is. And she says, I'm not sure. She went to a Calgary rodeo and got knocked up. She said she was popular there. And he's saying, so you screwed a bunch of cowboys. And Gabby is like, oh, Carlos is laughing. And she says, why do you think this is funny? And he's like, don't you see? We just got our baby back. And then Libby and Frank keep arguing about this shit. And so.
Well, I feel like, okay, so Gabby, like, she's just pushing so hard. And I guess I just don't really, like, understand why. And then now it's like they're happy that this Frank guy's not the dad. But I'm like, I feel like they just hope it's going to get even more complicated. Like, now you're at risk of it being more complicated, I guess.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, I'm not sure there's a win-win when you're buying a baby illegally. Yeah. Like, I didn't think it was going to be simple, and now it's more complicated for sure. So, we'll see. But they are at Edie's. Edie has an engagement party this episode, which we'll cover next. Mm-hmm. But they get called out of the engagement party because they hear that Libby is having her baby. So, at the hospital, Gabby is freaking out. And the baby is born. They missed it. They said the kid just flipped flipped out. Isn't that a dream? Joke
that she has like a loose vagina?
Maybe.
Like, is that what it's supposed to be?
I don't know if that's what the joke is, but I'm like, I'd be thankful if a baby slipped out of me. I heard.
I feel like this episode, they really hammered in that Libby's like a whore.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, she doesn't even know how many cowboys she fucked. Like, whatever. Yeah.
Maybe that's the innuendo, but I'm like, also, childbirth is painful. I would hope that it would just slip out of me. Like, I just fall out of me. So they missed it. The baby slipped out. And they say that they're family and they're confused about this. And the chick is like, Libby's like, they're the parents. And they see the baby. They take turns holding it sweetly. Mm-hmm. Gabby's scared, but then she really nails it. It's hard to mishold a baby. Well, I don't know. I've misheld a baby.
You've never held a baby.
But I made the mistake because you kind of cradle it. You're supposed to support the head. And I'm like, gonna have a loose neck. I don't know. So it looks like a little alien, I said, but they think it's cute. So
they think it's cute.
Yeah, they're saying it's worth it. They're taking turns holding it. Carlos is like, it's my turn, and she's like, just a minute, and he's like, you're hogging her, and it is cute because we've never seen them be this cute before. Mm-hmm. Then Frank rolls up and he's outside the room yelling about who the dad is. Mm-hmm. And he wants to know. And she's like, I'm not going to tell you. I told you it was some rodeo guy. I don't remember his name. So they're just stamping horror on her head yet again. Mm-hmm. He pours coffee liqueur and says that on himself, it says he's going to set himself on fire. And she's like, that's not going to work because it's coffee liqueur. So,
yeah, and she's like, what the fuck? And then he burns himself.
And it ends up being revealed that Libby fucked his 19-year-old brother, so he's just barely legal. Frank's 19-year-old brother.
Who's in high school.
Yeah, he's in high school, so he must have been held back.
Yeah.
he just needed to repeat a grade or two. Mm-hmm. And they're calling security. They're not giving up the baby. And then Carlos and Gabby sneak out of the hospital taking the baby. The papers aren't valid that they signed because the dad has been revealed. So fuck Libby is mm-hmm. the message there. And they just sneak out and they're trying to hurry. And they have the little Porsche and Carlos is like, we need to set up this baby seat. I don't know how to do it. And he's panicking. And then Gabby, who is so worried about being a parent, gets back there, sets it up like stats. No problem. She's like, I got this. And she straps this baby in with confidence. And mm-hmm. then they go on their merry way. And they said they're not going to make it easy to get this baby back. So hats off to Carlos and Gabby. Mm-hmm. I'm actually happy for them, even though they came about getting their baby in the worst way possible.
I think it's nice, though, to see them like actually be on a team.
Yeah, they're fighting for the same thing finally. Mm-hmm. So yes, that's where they end up. But we can talk about the engagement party from hell next, because it truly is a nightmare.
Yeah, so do we want to just go through Susan's story?
Yeah, we can talk about Susie Q.
Okay, Susie Q. Hate that nickname for her, but
she doesn't make him stop.
No, and I think Susan has a really hard time with boundaries is what I'm learning.
Oh, okay.
I think now that we've kind of looked at this, see, now that like we've had some time, we're almost two seasons through, and as those of you that follow our Instagram have seen, we've kind of done like a recap of each character through the season so far. It's really made me see that Susan just truly has no boundaries, and not just like with Carl, like even with Mike, like her weird like going over there to tell him that like she's getting married, like she just doesn't understand how to set or to respect other people's boundaries.
Mike repeatedly told her that he doesn't want to talk to her. Yeah. And I don't know why he even let her back in, because it seems that one day, like, okay, the day that she was like, I'm going to write a book, which where is this book, Susan? She never wrote this book. I'm going to write a book about my dad. And then he is a merchant marine. And then she finds out about who her daddy-o is. And like before that episode, when she goes over to tell Mike that, like, he explicitly said he had no interest in talking to her anymore.
He's been super hot and cold, because I feel like one episode he'll be like nice to her, and then the next episode he's clearly annoyed by her presence. So it does feel like they're trying to make it seem like they're buddies now, but they never talk in a normal way, so there's no real reason for it. Like, I don't know. I've just found it to be very, Susan is so self-absorbed that she can't like see outside of like why that might bug somebody, or like,
yeah,
and then she like can't it's like she likes the drama, like, and I think that guy hit the nail on the head last season, that date she went.
Oh, the date that was, yeah, like, horrible, but he was just like, whatever, you love drama.
Yeah, like, there's no reason for her to have Carl, like, even, okay, her biggest excuse to have Carl around at this point is, like, co-parenting with Julie, but even Julie's like, stop, like, I'm asking you to stop.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm begging you to not make this more confusing. What does Susan do? Disregards her daughter's wishes, and again, disregards her boundaries. Like, her daughter's clearly uncomfortable,
yeah,
like, by what's happening. And I don't know, this, like, Susan as a character, it's kind of jarring to, like, but there are people out there like this, so I guess it's
relevant. I mean, yeah, it is what it is, yeah, but we're not a Susan stan account, and right, basically this episode she continues her fuckery. Mm-hmm. I'd like to say Carl is provoking this activity. Absolutely. At this point, but he is also not respecting any boundaries, as we see when he walks into their motherfucking kitchen for breakfast.
No, and I it's not 100% on Susan for sure. I guess I just wish, like, Susan, from a female standpoint, watching the storyline, I do wish that she would be a little bit of a stronger person when it came to Carl, because he is so nasty to her repeatedly, like, through the past, like, even this season, the last season too, like, he's just awful. So I just don't really get it, but
yeah,
regardless. So this episode, Susan and it's mostly focused on, like, Susan and Carl and their little lie that they've had, where they got married because she needed insurance money for the surgery that took a million years to get to. And it culminates with Edie finally finding out what happened and getting her revenge. So to kick it off, Carl shows up at Susan's house to have lunch with them. And they're having this weird, like, flirtatious.
Well, he, like, walks in. He's like, what's breakfast? He just, yeah, waltzes in.
He just shows up. And he's just, like, acting like he lives there. And he makes a comment about how they're his two favorite gals. And Julie's like,
like, Julie is appalled.
Yeah, she's really, like, not okay. And again, a lot of this does, like, this behavior does fall on Carl. But it's almost like Susan is, like, inviting it in, though. She's like, yeah, doesn't have a problem with it. So he tells them that he proposed to Edie. And Susan, like, gets all, like, freaked out about it. And she's like, well, we're legally married. And he's like, well, weddings take a long time to plan, so it's not a big deal. And then they start, like, reminiscing about their own wedding. And
yeah,
Susan gets that, like, big-eyed look on her face. And yay, Julie keeps bringing up, she's like, remember Edie? Remember the person you just told us you proposed to 5 seconds ago?
I know. He's like, it was spontaneous. He's, like, quite the salesman about it.
He is. So then later, Susan and Julie are walking, and, like, they're walking towards Edie's house.
Well, Julie's walking over there, and yeah, Susan's like, why don't I join you? And yeah, Julie's like, maybe don't. Like,
yeah, she's like, what the fuck? And she's like, please stop. Like, you're just flirting with Dad. Like, it's weird. And Susan's like, shouldn't you be happy, like, your divorced parents are being chummy? And it's like, so you're going to gaslight your daughter? Like, your daughter's not an idiot. Like, this isn't being chummy. This is weird, but yeah, okay. So then they get up to Edie's house, and Edie's unpacking her car. And she has, like, a ton of stuff and supplies, and she tells them that they're going to be having their engagement party, but then proceeds to tell them that she's actually going to do a surprise wedding. And Susan starts panicking because, like they just pointed out, she and Carl are still legally married, and she clumsily tries to talk Edie out of it by saying Carl hates surprises and all these little things. And let me tell you one thing. Regardless of whether or not that's true, if you're talking to a lady and you're the ex of this lady's current boyfriend, maybe don't try and, like, act like you know the boy better, because I feel like that's definitely going to offend the woman you're talking to. Like, Edie, you could just watch Edie shut down the moment Susan tried to say that shit.
Yeah, like, she was like, yeah, cool, shut the fuck up.
Yeah. And so,
But then Carl later does say that he hates surprises.
He does. Susan's not wrong. But the point being, like, it was just a bad way to approach her situation.
Yeah. Like, oh my God. Because, well, also Susan was like, don't get married. That was more the message. Mm-hmm. It wasn't even, like, sly.
It was so whack. So later we see Susan standing outside with her cane. And as Carl's pulling or driving by,
outside with her cane, she's also crippled.
Yeah, she's crippled right now. So Carl, like, drives, and she slyly gets his attention. No, just kidding. She starts screaming his name in the middle of the
Carl!
Street, drawing all the attention ever. And I'm like, wouldn't he even, like, see this from her window or something? Like, they're right up the street. So she stops him, and she tells him about the surprise, and as Julia just pointed out, Carl says, well, I don't even like surprises. And she's like, I told her that. But they, like, have this whole, like, back and forth. And inside, Julie's, like, watching them from the window, clearly disgusted by everything happening.
Yeah.
So they decide they're going to go talk to Edie. And they get there, and Edie opens the door, and she basically is like, I have a surprise for you. And they walk in, and who is it? None other than Dr. Ron McCready.
Dr. Motherfucking Ron.
Sitting there looking.
I thought we saw the last of him.
I kind
of
thought we did, too. I forgot.
I thought that they were actually, I think the last episode ended where she was taking a phone call from him.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, maybe they'll get back together, but... No, as you'll see, he had other plans.
Well, it's weird because when he's sitting there, he looks like he's upset, but also like he did something wrong.
He looks like a guilty child.
It's really weird. I'm like, okay. So basically, we find out that Dr. Ron told Edie everything about the insurance fraud and all that fun stuff. And I know that at a previous time, Julie and I talked about this, and Julio said that she's like, you mentioned that he should have just reported Susan the fucking, like, police or whatever.
Yeah,
or
he should have just reported company. The insurance fraud.
Yeah, like, fuck it. Like, if you're gonna ruin her life, ruin it.
Ruin it.
Like, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Well, then Edie starts, like, kind of pops off at them, and Dr. Ron, like, hands her a vase, and she throws it at them. So it's a pretty iconic moment.
I like the teamwork there. Yeah. I think they were both lovers scorned.
And I feel like Susan, again, starts acting like the victim. And I'm like, sis, you're not the victim. Like, you guys decided to lie about this. And the only reason Edie even, like, anyone got hurt was because of the lying. That's literally the only reason. And that was the one thing you guys decided to do for some reason.
Yeah.
That hurt anybody. I don't know. It's super bizarre. So the next time we see Susan, Carl and Edie go over to her house to discuss the whole situation. And Edie calls them out for lying, and she's like, this whole thing was my idea, like the marriage. So like, why, like, I would have been okay with this. Like, it's weird that you guys snuck around, not that, like, yeah, you did this. And she's like, they're like, yeah, we were childish and we're sorry. They're like acting like, oh my god, it just,
I gotta love so Edie though for having such a clear head about things. Yeah. Just, she's got a good head on her shoulders.
She does.
She doesn't take things personally. She fucking just moves on. Gotta respect it. But
I feel like she gets the short end of the stick a lot for like no real reason.
Yeah.
Like everyone's so mean to her, and I'm like, but why? Like, I don't think she's done anything wrong. But
yeah.
As they're talking, Edie tells them she is going to punish them. So she said, Carl is going to throw me the most elaborate wedding ever. And she's like, figure out what you can afford and then triple it. And then she said, Susan, you're going to be my fucking slave as I plan this wedding. And you're going to bartend at my engagement party. And I'm not lifting a fucking finger for anything ever. And Susan's like, okay. And Susan, oh, and then in there, Susan kind of makes a comment. She's like, well, I'm broke. After, Edie makes the comment about the wedding.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, I know about your church mouse status, which was really funny to me. But again, I'm like, Susan has no reason to be broke. I still can't quite figure out why her money
is
situation.
It because Lonnie stole her money?
But she gets child support and money from Carl every month for
does
spousal
she
support.
Confirmed get that money? I
yeah
don't know.
Because there's that whole episode where she freaks out about the, she was like, is the child support
now? Yeah,
like, and I know it's not brought up now, so I'm assuming Carl's been paying it.
I mean, that's still
and
not enough
house,
sometimes,
but she clearly got the house.
I mean, I don't know the logistics of her finance. I don't know if they still have a payment on the house that she has to pay. And I also don't think she's making much money as a book editor.
So, but then...
And she has to take care of a child.
But Carl... Okay, but Carl, when they got divorced, well, yes, he's a lawyer. He had an affair. So it's highly likely she got at least half of, like, everything.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm just curious to know what her money situation is, because she isn't seeming to try that hard to work.
Yeah, but I think that's why she's so poor, because she doesn't work.
Because she doesn't care.
I literally don't think she works, because Lonnie, like, stole her money and left her. She doesn't work for that agency anymore that she was writing for.
I don't know.
So
I need more information on that,
she's
but whatever.
Poor.
So the next time we see them all is at the engagement party. So at the engagement party, Edie is, like, giving Susan shit about, by making her do, like, super complicated drinks that no one's ever heard of. And so Susan's like, okay, I'll go make it. So she goes to the bar at Edie's house, which is very, like, 80s porn set bar, which I love.
It is.
And she opens this, like, cocktail book, because she needs to find the recipe for this weird-ass drink that Edie asked her for. And Julie, like, is sifting through the book to find it, and she finds the photo of Carl and Susan, because it was Carl's book, I guess. And Susan decides to play dumb and act like she has no idea why he would have that. Mm-hmm. Or she doesn't even pretend to try and figure out why. And Julie's clearly kind of annoyed by it. She's like, I don't understand. So Susan goes and confronts Carl upstairs. And she's basically, like, trying to force him to say that he wants to marry Edie. And he's, like, not really doing it.
Because, like, it matters, like, what he says. Yeah. Like, it's just, like, why do you have this picture overall?
Yeah.
And he won't fucking say it.
No. And then he's, like, well, I keep the photo because I need to look at it as punishment because I screwed up the best thing that ever happened to me. And, like,
it's just chill out.
Yeah, it's so ugly. And so then he starts kissing Susan, and then he's like, I'll do anything for you. And then as soon as Edie starts coming up the stairs, he, like, throws Susan off the
bed. Yeah, Susan's, like, passed out on the floor at the end.
Yeah, and so that's kind of where their storyline is right now.
So we have a question about, like, what's going to happen with the – will they, won't they, Carl and Susan now, I guess.
Yeah.
Will they, won't they get married, Carl, Edie? So we've got questions. Mm-hmm. But sidebar of this party, we got to mention Paul. Paul is fucking at this party. Paul is motherfucking at the engagement party. Mm-hmm. Paul is there and Edie is jazzed. And I said, because they made out once. She's excited. It was the best make out of her life.
Apparently.
And he appreciated the invite because everybody in the neighborhood hates him. He says, surprise. I got it because I know how people feel. And she says, I'm inclusive. And if there's one thing Edie is, it's inclusive. And that's the first part of Paul there. Then we have a very uncomfortable part that comes up. Edie's opening gifts. Mm-hmm. And she gets a pair of literal dentures from Mrs. Martha Huber's sister, Felicia. Mm-hmm. And she says, they were Martha's. I know how close you were. I think you would want to have something of hers. She had orthodontic issues for the time. There is something wrong with this lady. She has schizophrenia or something. There is something wrong. Mm-hmm. She's so weird. And she says, I know it's unconventional, but I knew you were friends. So that's her reasoning. And Edie is like, oh my gosh, this is weird. And I think you drank too much. She said, sorry if I offended anyone, but while you were hanging out in the company of a murderer, she says something like that. And then Paul just like is like, oh my God. Yeah. Paul like sneaks out. Like, yeah. So I think Felicia is drunk. She gifts the dentures. She calls out Paul being a murderer. She makes a big scene, and yeah, Paul literally slinks out like he is jelly. Mm-hmm. So that made me giggle.
I did kind of like, though, that he didn't really fight back. He's like, you know what? I'm just going to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, Paul is done and tired. Yeah. So that happened. But next we can cover Lynette and Bree. They kind of have intertwined storylines. So we'll go through that. But yeah, basically Susan just ends up on the floor in a bad position at, you know, because of Carl. So because of a man.
Because of a really boring, not even interesting, like, sleazy man. Like, he's so sleazy. It's
I
like,
know.
What even I truly would love to see a flashback of how they met. Because I need to know, like, what the fuck happened there.
Yeah, there was this show. I mean, not was. There is a really popular show on Netflix called Love is Blind. But in the first season, there was some dude that was like, he ends up marrying one of the chicks, spoiler alert, mm-hmm. but he had like two girls vying after him, and he for real was like the most boring dude ever. Like, and he was just a player, like not interesting, but all these girls were sprung off of him and they were like fighting over him. And like, I just remember being like, what the fuck? Like,
I have to ask, but hey, yes, we all like what we like, I guess.
So next thing we know, we're just going to talk about Bree. Next thing we know, we're going to talk about Bree. But Bree, as we noted in the beginning of the episode, she's struggling with her alcoholism. Yes. So last time we checked in with Bree, she was struggling with her alcoholism. Mm-hmm. And there we go. Okay. Yeah, she was struggling with her alcoholism and her interest in her sponsor, Peter, which I've heard when you're dealing with addiction, it can be super easy to, like, you're not supposed to date within the first year or two. Mm-hmm. And then, like, you also probably just shouldn't fall in love with your sponsor. Like,
that's a huge rule, actually. It's like you can't have a sponsor who is the sex that you're attracted to.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, so she's making all kinds of mistakes for an early AA member. But
remember, she's not an alcoholic, Julia.
Yeah, I know. She doesn't even have a problem. Like, she doesn't even need to be there. So Bree comes downstairs to find this lawyer guy just grabbing a cream soda from her fridge. Andrew's lawyer, who she keeps referring to as his friend, which I think is insane. So he's like, oh, she offers him a frosted glass as well. And then he's like, oh, by the way, here's a list of people we're deposing. So this starts off a very interesting dynamic between Lynette and Bree, because Lynette and Mrs. McCluskey, but they don't talk about that. I'd be more worried about Mrs. McCluskey being like, I found her passed out in her front yard. Yeah. Like, but she's worried about Lynette. So Lynette's on this list. So she goes over to Lynette. It's a rainy afternoon and she's like, I know you're angry, but I just want to tell you I am, like, in a recovery group, yada yada. I'm also sorry. And then Lynette's like, you're a real friend and I value you. I don't want to be mad. So proud of you, babe. So glad to hear this, basically, is the vibe. And Bree is not out of the woods yet. She says she still has a court case hanging over her head. So that's what's going on. And she's like, yeah, I heard about it. Andrew's trying to get emancipated. What the fuck? So they're really catching up on everything. And she mentions the deposition, and this turns everything a little bit sour, because Lynette's like, I hope that you're not here just because you know, like, I'm going to be deposed, and I hope you know that I'm going to just tell the truth. And so this isn't going very well for Bree. And she tells him about the accusations that Andrew made about the sexual abuse, which, wow, Andrew, you're really fucking crazy for that. And Lynette's like, I'm just not gonna lie. And Bree is shook by this whole conversation. It didn't go her way, so it doesn't feel good. Now we're back at AA with her hot Tarzan sponsor. And she says that she got his message that he wanted to see her before the meeting. He drops some key info that he is like, I can't be your sponsor. Disappointing to Bree. And then she meets Donna, her new sponsor. And she says, I don't want one. I don't like that. Yes. I do not want a new sponsor. And I don't want this chick, Donna. I'm comfortable working with you. And he said it was always temporary, and given the other night, we need to end this. And she's like, all we did was kiss. And he's like, we'd be kidding ourselves. Like, it's just not good for our recovery. Bree is like, terrible things are happening to me. I'm headed to court. I need your support. Which, Bree, like, don't make the man, like, it's not his responsibility.
Also, he barely knows you. Like, what's happening?
It's not his responsibility to give a fuck about that stuff. No. It's horrible what you're going through. But also, like, this man is just some guy at AA. So, you have my support. You have support. It just won't be mine, he says. And I'm like, this guy is somebody who knows boundaries. Speaking of everybody's boundaries.
He needs to be Susan's sponsor. Yeah. How to set boundaries.
Yeah, so we catch up with Bree, and Donna is over. And the thing you got to know about Donna, I guess, is that she's proactive. She won't hold your hand if you go on a bender. She believes in behavior modification. And Bree brings her some muffins, and she's like, you should also know that I'm not a lesbian. But she's kind of a lesbian, maybe.
She gives those vibes. It was like a someone doth protest too much moment or something. I don't know.
I could see, like, some weird porn with Donna and Bree lookalikes.
There is part of me that's Pornhub. Like, I hope that exists.
Yes. Well, I read something interesting. There's a porn star in the second season of Euphoria. Yeah. And she's on it because the writer of Euphoria saw that she did a porn where she portrayed Jules as, like, it was a porn based off of Euphoria. And he saw her in it and was like, hey, do you want to be in this?
That's so crazy. I think I read that same article.
Yes. So I imagine there's some Donna Bree porn out there in my fantasies. So, yes, she said, and I think Bree had the right response when this chick was like, I'm not a lesbian. Bree goes, good for you. If I was the program, wouldn't let me be your sponsor because it wouldn't be good for your recovery. So whatever vibe you might get, that's all on you. If you're getting a vibe, that's just you. And Bree is like, cool. I think I was making progress with Peter. And she's like, stop. You're fixating on Peter. And she's like, no, I'm jeopardizing my recovery. And she says, no, you're making excuses. Another person who knows boundaries and like what's right and wrong and the truth.
Yeah.
So I really like Donna as well. And she's like, I have a 99% success rate as a sponsor because I have zero tolerance for people who lie to themselves. Donna, way to my heart.
I need Donna. I'm like, can you come be my life coach, Donna?
I know.
Like, get your butt over here.
And then Donna gets up and Bree's like, where are we going? She's like, hiking. Nothing to take your mind off booze, like hiking. Mm-hmm. So cut to, actually, we're going to talk about Lynette a little bit here. Okay. Because Lynette and Andrew, the classic ex-Tara scene comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Lynette is like about to be deposed, but we're not there yet. Well, first of all, Gabby comes to her office and Gabby's like, they're chit-chatting. Yeah, why is Gabby at her office? But whatever.
A lot of these things keep happening at Lynette's office. And I'm like, okay, I guess she never leaves.
Yeah. The lawyer comes by. He drops off some pictures of Andrew being abused at Lynette's office. And he says, you know, the thing with Bree, we got to talk about it. She could have caused real harm to your children. And Lynette at first doesn't feel right about like giving her deposition. And she's like, and then she finds out if she refuses, she'll be compelled to give one. And he drops off the pictures of Andrew's little fake abuse scandal.
And you can, I think this is a testament to Felicity Huffman's acting. But you could totally watch her, like, if you just watch her face, you could see the moments where, like, the doubt starts to come into play. Because at first she's, like, pretty straightforward, like, no, Bree didn't do that. But then, like, he starts talking about, like, the drinking and how she just, like, she doesn't always remember.
Yeah.
And Lynette, you can, like, watch it in her eyes. Like, she's like, okay, well, maybe this is accurate.
Yeah. And so then next thing we know, Gabby is at the office and she shows Gabby the picture of Andrew's little bruised face. And Gabby is laughing, basically. She's like, yeah, like, Bree could have done that. And I think hats off to Gabby. Love it. And she's like, I'm just telling you what the lawyer said. And she's like, you think that Bree punched Andrew? Ha, that's hilarious. She spanked my kids and lied about drinking, so I'm not sure. And she's like, oh, and then Lynette brings up that she saw Bree bitch slap her mother-in-law, which I love. Mm-hmm. And Gabby's like, I'm siding with Bree. And she's like, how can you be sure? And she says, Andrew is saying systematic physical abuse and Bree is saying it's the trust fund for the car. So what's the truth? That's what Lynette said. She's rationalizing. And then Gabby's like, well, I remember being 17 and I would have done much more than punch myself in the eye for a car.
Also, I'm like, dang, Gabby, what would you have done?
I'm like, yes, Gabby. I'm like,
I want to know. What's her limit?
Yes. Oh, so man. Then Lynette rolls home in her little Xterra that she got, which is, this really doesn't happen. They don't give you cars to test drive for fun.
Or just own.
It's yeah. He's outside shooting hoops solo, and Lynette comes, and he's like, hey, sweet ride. And she's like, you think? And she's like, come over here. I'd like to pick your brain. You're actually my demographic. And this is when they really, like, hit home. Like, we almost went and bought an Xterra after this. She says, still can't believe you're old enough to drive. I remember when you were 10 and I paid you $1 to rake our leaves. And he was like, yeah, you're pretty cheap. And I'm like, what a fucking little bitch.
I'm just sitting there and I'm like, Andrew, play this better. I thought you were better at manipulating. Like, yeah,
Lynette's like, okay. Yeah, sure, and he's like set up for MP3. And she's like, yeah, all the bells and whistles. But hey, listen, I really want to tell you how sorry I am. And he's like, what? He like completely forgot about anything in his life besides his car right now. She says, your lawyer came to see me and I'm going to be deposed and it's going to be hard. And he's like, oh, yeah, I know. And she's like, you have to remember she's a different person when she drinks. And she's like, it's hard for me to believe that Bree could hurt you. And he's like, yeah, do you have the keys?
He's like, yeah, that is hard. Anyway.
Yeah, she's like, anyway, I feel guilty this went on right under our nose. If there's anything I can do. And he's like, can I, like, what about this car? Like, how much is, like, he says something about the car. And she's like, it's out of your price range. And he's like, I don't think money will be a problem if you tell the lawyer the truth. And he jumps in the car. Yeah. And
you just see Lynette's face. Just
Lynette's like, hell fucking no. So then we end up at the deposition. And at the deposition, it doesn't go Andrew's way. I have to say, Lynette gets there, and let me find this. So at the deposition, like I said, it doesn't go Andrew's way. They're on the record, and they ask her about the babysitting incident. Is it not true that while your children were in Bree's care, she got drunk and allowed them to wander to a quote unquote business district? She says, my kids don't wander. They scurry like they're rats. And the lawyer's like, huh?
Yeah, the lawyer's like,
he's like, this is not going my way either. Yeah. And he says, do you know rats can fit through the hole the size of a quarter? She's like, anyway, my children like do that all the time. And she's like, so you're saying you don't hold Bree responsible for losing your children? She's like, no, Bree and I have known each other a long time. I completely trust her. Wonderful friend, fantastic mother, and puts most of us to shame. And Andrew's like, oh my God, you're lying. He freaks out.
He starts screaming at her like a maniac.
And he says, do you consider Bree to have a drinking problem? She says, no. And she says, and why did you line empty bottles on her stoop? I was just helping her with recycling. And then they are like, I need to remind you about the consequences of perjury. And she's like, no. She's like, I hate liars. And she looks at Andrew, looks at Bree, and we're like, Lynette. Amazing. And so next thing we know, Peter's rolling up somewhere and he gets a call and he's like, hello. And it's Bree. And she's like, hey, if you feel, or he says, if you feel like you need a drink, call Donna, because I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
And she's like, I just wanted to invite you to this like engagement party, aka Edie's engagement party, which we don't see Bree at, do we? Do we see her there?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't know. She says it's a casual get-together, and there's sushi. You like sushi. And he's like, come on. And she's like, okay, I really need us to be friends, Peter. And I'm like, stop forcing him to be your friend. She's like, when I'm not with you, I'm not myself, and that's not good. And I'm like, you should, like, think about that a little bit.
Listen to yourself.
Like, you should just chill. Mm-hmm. And so I can relax with you in a way I can't with other people. With them, I have to pretend I have it all together, but you know that I don't, so it's easier. And she's like, it's just a party. And he says, Bree, don't fuck can call me again.
He's like, please stop.
He says it in a nice way.
Yeah, but he's like, I'm begging you.
The energy is there of the fucking. So OMG, she's hurt. And then she goes to some bar and she's like, I need advice from a professional. Would love to get drunk. Do you have anything that will do that in a hurry? And I'm like, maybe shots. Like, I don't know. I'm like,
do you not know how alcohol works?
Like, so she moves on from wine to hard alcohol.
I know.
Next thing we know, Peter comes to find Bree passed out at this bar. And this is before Find My Location. So incredible detective skills to Peter.
Yeah.
He's like, why didn't you call Donna? And she's like, I don't need Donna. I need you. And he helps her up and carries her out. And he's like, I don't even like redheads. And that is that on that. But we get a little bit of Mike. I'll just cover this in a hurry. Mm-hmm. He's talking to Felicia before the engagement party that we don't see him at either.
Oh, he shows up to fucking Mary Alice's funeral. Like, yeah, it's no problem, but not this.
Uninvited.
He's like, I guess maybe, no, Edie would totally invite Mike to watch Susan be a little slave.
Oh, I don't know what happened. So Felicia shows up and she's like, I want you to look at something. This is someone talking to Paul. Oh, she's like, look at Myra Holt talking to Paul like he's any other neighbor. And she knows that he killed my sister and she's there talking, what the fuck? And he's like, what do you want? You're a little hyper-focused on this.
Yeah.
And she's like, how good is your memory? Do you remember the promise you made me? And he's like, I'm not going to kill him. I'm sorry. I'm over that. I'm done.
Things have changed.
Yeah, things have changed. And she's upset. She's like, my sister's rotting in the ground, and so is Deidre. And he's like, nope, sorry, door's closed, not gonna do that. And she says, sounds to me like you let go of your rage. She says, maybe I have. And she's like, I haven't. And that's that. So At the end, Marielle Young says, temptation comes to all of us. Whether or not we succumb depends on our ability to recognize its disguise. Sometimes it arrives in the form of an old flame flickering back to life, or a new friend who could end up being so much more, or a young child who awakens feelings we didn't know we had. And so we give in to temptation, all the while knowing, come morning, we will have to suffer the consequences. So, loaded. Loaded.
That was like a wild, that was actually a pretty wild ride. That was a crazy episode.
I forgot how crazy it was.
Yeah, like, I mean, a fucking baby gets snatched, essentially. And, like, we literally see, like, kind of, I mean, I don't know if this is the peak moment of the lawsuit for Andrew, but, like, this was a pretty big moment in that storyline. And, I mean, I don't know. Wow.
Well.
Do you have your fuck, marry, kill ready?
I do.
I do, too.
I'm gonna fuck Peter.
Okay.
Because he was very Tarzan-y. I like Peter. He's got boundaries. Mm-hmm. Like, he's a hottie. Like, he's just...
He played Tarzan in another life.
Yeah, he's just great all around. I like that he's denying Bree left and right because mm-hmm. she needs it. And she's not fucking listening.
Yeah.
I would kill... I'd kill Carl because I think that he is really approaching his worst.
This was pretty ugly behavior for him.
Pretty ugly. Like, just because my queen Edie, like, mm-hmm. Edie's still my queen through and through, and he's really fucking with her now. I could care less mm-hmm. that he fucks up Susan's life, but Edie did nothing wrong, and I feel like she's been really forgiving. Like,
I do feel like Edie has her flaws, but she doesn't deserve this.
Yeah.
And I think it's really sad. And I think part of it, too, like, Susan's reaction to what Carl was saying should have been bigger.
Yeah.
But this is peak. This is kind of what Edie gets pissed off about, though. I'm starting to really see why Edie just can't stand Susan. And it's because of shit like this.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, my God. Like, even though Edie doesn't know this exact scenario, this is the type of bullshit Susan does.
Yeah.
Like dating that contractor after Edie asked her not to. Like, this kind of turns around into that. And it's like, Susan, like... Do you just want other women to hate you? Like, is yeah. that your goal in life? Because you really are not a girl power kind of gal.
Yeah, so I have to kill Carl, and then I'm going to marry Donna.
Okay.
Because, like I said, I'm loving these standards. I love that she's a 99% success rate. I like that she takes no shit. She hates people who don't stay true to their word. I love it. Donna, yeah. marry me. I it's love awesome. It. So,
yeah.
What about you?
So my fuck is Lynette. I just, she was pretty hot this episode. Just her detective work. I liked it. She was thorough. She's a good friend. I just, that was awesome. I'm here for it. I'm going to marry Gabby because she's got some capable mom skills.
Okay.
But not just like mom skills, like just the whole conversation with the baby buying and like, I want her in my life.
12K.
I need her to be my partner in crime.
Yeah.
This week, my kill was a toss-up between Andrew and Carl.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of initially wanted to give it to Andrew, but after talking to you about Carl, I'm going to agree with Carl. Mostly because Lynette low-key did kill Andrew this episode. So, like, Carl's the one that we need to worry about.
Yes. Yeah. Do you have a housewife of the week?
Yeah, it's Lynette.
Lynette, yeah.
So this was, like, peak friendship moment.
Friendship moment, and I also respected that before, like, she, like, was gonna stick to her word before. She told Bree, I'm gonna tell the truth. And then mm-hmm. when she discovered what was going on, she showed up for her friend. But I respect that. Even if she had never found that out, she would have said the truth.
Mm-hmm. I think that Lynette has a lot of integrity. I think she is a true friend because she did do her due diligence. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just like, oh, the lawyer convinced her and she like rolled with those doubts. Like the moment she had those doubts, she actually confided in someone else to see if what their opinion would be, and then like actually kind of tested Andrew. Like, I don't know, I just feel like that's a good friendship moment, but also just like a cool person thing to do. Like,
yeah,
I don't know, like I like that she thinks things through like that, and I just, that was awesome. Have a lot of respect for her, and I just, yeah, I think Lynette is the kind of friend that we all want to have, and then Susan's like the exact opposite of that.
The Susan hate is strong with you.
Right,
I'm like, Lynette's our housewife.
Well, this was
keep Susan
like,
out of it.
No, I just meant like, because I said earlier that like Susan's not a good like friend to women, and so
yeah.
I guess this is like the flip side of that. Like to see that, and then this on the other side in the same episode, it's a bit jarring because
yeah.
they're all supposed to be friends, but. Yeah, Lynette's awesome. She kicks ass, and she never wants
children housewife, to be crown housewife yet mm-hmm. again. Yeah. And then we have our Apple rating. So, are you ready? Mm-hmm. Okay. 3, 2, 1, 4.5.
I gave it
a 5. Whoa, 5.
Yeah.
Okay, okay.
I'll cut this out, but I gave it a 5 in our last recording.
Oh, did you? I don't even remember what I gave it.
4.75.
Oh, shit. So went down a
little bit. I was going to go down a little bit, but I decided to stick to it.
Okay. 5. Why 5?
I'm going to go with 5 because I think this episode was pretty strong. Every character, every main housewife, and even Edie had, like, something to do.
Yes.
And while Susan pissed me off, her plot was interesting for once.
Yes.
This episode, because I liked that Dr. Ron came back. The one time I was happy to see Dr. Ron, I guess. I loved Edie in this episode. I think that really, like, elevated that plot line. I loved Lynette and Bree's story, and I loved Gabby's story. I liked the little sprinkle of Mike and Felicia. I
mean, okay, okay. Yeah, we did get everybody with Applewhite.
Yeah. But I kind of don't even really.
I'm like, Applewhite too?
Yeah. I'm like, whatever.
Okay.
But it just felt like a strong episode. We had a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
Entertaining.
I gave it 4.5, which is rather high. I just have been trying to, like, not go as high because we talked about how a 4 out of 5 is, like, it's like a B. Yeah. So this is an A for me. But yeah, everybody, like, performed well. I thought, like, I liked Susan's storyline more than usual, but mm-hmm. I still felt like this. I feel like the Carl fuckery is, like, getting old sometimes. Mm-hmm. I like that Mike was in there, which could have had a little bit more. Like, that we had a little bit of Paul. Yeah, I guess there's no reason that I didn't give it a 5. There's not a good reason besides, like, no Applewhite.
Trust your gut, though.
Yeah.
You know when you've watched a 5 episode.
I know when I've watched a 5. It wasn't a 5 for me. There was something missing. I did like Gabby and Carlos's storyline, but I prefer the ones that are a bit more emotional for mm-hmm. them.
Yeah.
So this was a fun one, okay. But I don't know. It just was not a 5 for me.
I felt like it was a 5 for me.
It's in your heart and soul.
Yeah. It's like weird because I agree with your criticism of Susan's storyline. The only reason why the Carl stuff didn't feel old this time is because we actually got movement because Edie found out.
Yes.
So I think, like, if this was another episode where it's just them bullshitting and lying and trying to do whatever they're doing, I would totally agree with you on that.
Yeah.
But I did like that it felt like something happened.
Yeah.
But then by the end of the episode, it almost felt moot anyway. So I don't know.
Whatever. Well, 4.5 and 5. But that brings us to the end of our episode, and we're so happy to be back. We know we had a little bit of a hiatus here. Mm-hmm. And we're thankful that you're listening, and we hope that you enjoyed it. And in the meantime, before we drop again next Monday, we would invite you to go and, like, rate and review us anywhere you can, specifically Apple Podcasts would be great. Follow us on Spotify. We're also on, like, Stitcher and TuneIn and all these other places if you prefer to listen in a niche way. And we also have our Instagram that we post regularly, so we'd be happy if you checked us out and followed us there. And we have Twitter too, website, email, just hit us up. We're desperate housewives, super fans at this point, and experts, I'd like to say. So we love any other fans that come our way. But other than that, tune in next week. We'll be back. But we'll leave you with our words of wisdom to know your neighbors.
Know your neighbors.